Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends and neighbors, and welcome back to the Bill Press Pod. You know, it happens too damn often. There are far too many mass shootings in this country. In fact, they happen so often we tend to take them for granted. And yet there was something especially painful about last Saturday's mass shooting in Buffalo, New York. Not only 13 people shot, 10 of them fatally, but 11 out of 13 were black and targeted by the gunman only because they were black. It was an outright racist attack, motivated, the young killer admitted, by a crackpot idea called the Great Replacement Theory. The idea that Democrats or Jews or both are deliberately working to take political power away from white people and give it to African Americans and other people of color. I found one of the best analyses of the Great Replacement Theory in a political newsletter called Popular Information, founded by Judd Legum, a brilliant young journalist I worked closely with when he was editor-in-chief at Think Progress, at the Center for American Progress. In Popular Information, his newsletter, Judd Legum provides great reporting and important background on the major news stories of the day. And today, we're lucky to have him bring that wealth of information to us here on the Bill Press Pod. Judd Legum, it's been a long time since Think Progress, but it's really good to connect again.
Good to be back with you.
Thank you. Welcome to the Bill Press Pod. So I want to start with Monday's edition of the newsletter, your newsletter, Popular Information. We were all stunned over the weekend by this mass murder up in Buffalo. Young killer inspired, as he says, by what's called the Great Replacement Theory. You dive into that in the Monday edition of Popular Information. It's been around a long time. Tell us, what's it all about and where'd it come from?
Yeah, this is something that's been circulating for decades. It has its root deeply in racism, prejudice, anti-Semitism. And the idea is that there is a plot. Sometimes it's by Jews. More recently, it's by Democrats, but also Jews. And yeah. The idea is that they are plotting to replace white people with non-white people as a way to achieve political power. And this was something that was promoted in the 40s here in the United States by a United States senator, by others, and then kind of was revived in the 70s and 80s in France, really in response to migration and the trends of migration in Europe through a very racist novel called The Camp of Saints, and also some French philosophers who latched onto it. And then more recently, of course, it's been imported into United States politics. We saw it probably most vividly in 2017 in Charlottesville when the white supremacist marchers were chanting, "You will not replace us." So, and that should have been a warning sign right there.
Or the other version of it, Jews will not replace us, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But then what we've really seen since then, it's been about 5 years since then, is really the mainstreaming of this. And that's what I talked about mostly in today's newsletter was, you know, the mainstreaming. There's been a lot written about Tucker Carlson. There was a New York Times expose on what his show is all about. He's referenced this over 400 times. When the ADL called him out, he rejected that, doubled down on it. But, and I think Carlson's played a big part of this, it has really been incorporated into lots of what would ordinarily be considered mainstream Republican voices who have adopted this rhetoric.
Right.
And it's become somewhat ubiquitous, all the way to the point where almost 50% of Republicans actually believe this replacement theory, which started off as a fringe white nationalist conspiracy theory, is now accepted by almost 50% of Republicans. So it's a very troubling trend.
Right. I mean, we remember the crazy Steve King from Iowa, right, was kind of an exponent of this. But he was out there, as you point out, on the fringe, right, the extreme right. I mean, now it's come into the mainstream. And in your newsletter, you identify leading Republicans who have espoused this theory publicly, including Ron Johnson, right, from Wisconsin, Matt Gaetz from Florida, and even Elise Stefanik from New York, who's the third ranking House Republican. And they say this stuff and get away with it, right?
Yeah, it's really a rebranding of this kind of racial grievance, which was the purpose of the theory all along.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very unapologetic about it, even in the face. You know, one thing that actually shocked me as I was looking into this is, even after the shooting, you have Blake Masters, who's running for Senate in Arizona with $10 million from billionaire Peter Thiel, who's pushing the replacement theory after the shooting. So there isn't really much soul searching going on. There's not a lot of introspection. They're continuing to latch onto this. By the way, we also know how this theory leads to violence, because whether it's El Paso, the shooting in New Zealand, the mass shooting there, this has been cited repeatedly by mass shooters as the motivation for violence, which was part of the point with when the ADL confronted Tucker Carlson about this.
Right. And so I was going to ask you, what influence or impact do you think Fox News has had in the spreading of this theory, this doctrine, or whatever you want to call it? It's Tucker, but not just Tucker, correct?
Yeah, it's Tucker, but it's also, I think Laura Ingraham plays a big part. She was in the piece that I wrote this morning, talking about how Democrats want to replace you, the American voters, with, you know, new immigrants who aren't like you. So I think Laura Ingraham, Jeanine Pirro, it's really been incorporated. You know, Tucker Carlson, I think Laura Ingraham probably was on this before Tucker Carlson, to be honest. But I think Tucker Carlson has taken such a big stage in Fox News that he's pushing it, and it gets incorporated, you know, throughout all their programming.
How about the role of Donald Trump, who certainly, while on one side he at some point condemned white supremacism, at the same time he was welcoming their support, right? And kind of looking the other way.
Yeah, I think Trump was really at the vanguard of this. He has been possibly slightly less direct in using the replacement rhetoric, but he set the stage for this, talking about immigration as an issue of survival for the West, meaning that if you allow immigrants in, your entire culture and nation will be destroyed. I mean, that was really the basis of his campaign and his presidency. Then he brought in Stephen Miller, who was a big proponent of the racist novel that really encapsulates this whole theory, The Camp of the Saints. Steve Bannon, same thing, brought Steve Bannon in. And they really started to basically take this theory and translate it into executive action, with the Muslim ban and with other very restrictive immigration policies, you know, child separation. All of this, it doesn't make sense, but there's a logic to, if you believe that this is an invasion, that there is a plot to take over the country and that it's going to destroy the country because somehow the country is based on this idea of a white majority, well, then these very extreme steps start to make sense. So I do think that Trump played a large role.
One thing I find a little, I think some people find hard to connect is, and as you point out, in France, this was related to immigration, immigrants from North Africa, particularly Muslims. You know, in this country, it was directed a lot toward, particularly because of Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon and Donald Trump, toward immigrants from Latin America. Yet the target in Buffalo were African Americans, were Black Americans. What's the stretch there? What's the link?
Well, because I think from the outset, it's been about the preservation of whiteness and of the white majority. So both non-white immigrants,
mm-hmm.
and that, but also African Americans themselves pose a threat to that, and they're related in a way. And Tucker Carlson actually talked about this with the Immigration Act of 1964, which he described as one of the worst attacks on America in our history. And what that did was it relaxed some of these very severe immigration quotas that were largely based on race that ensured that immigrants were largely white people from North and Western Europe, Northern and Western Europe.
Yeah.
After the Immigration Act of 1964, you started to see more immigration from Asia, from Africa, from South America, where not all of the immigrants were white. So it is, it does play out in different ways, but I think there is a fundamental connection around white identity, and that's why it's a conspiracy theory that's associated with white nationalism.
Right. So the other big, one other big issue dominating the news for the last 10 days or so has been the Supreme Court and the leak of this opinion by Justice Alito indicating that the court, they've got enough votes, Clarence Thomas and Alito and three others, to overturn Roe v. Wade. In your newsletter, Judd, you talk about an aspect of this that I don't think anybody else has, and that is the amazing amount of support that American corporations have provided to anti-abortion political committees. I mean, there is a money-driven political side to this issue that is pretty stunning. What'd you find out?
Yeah, well, a lot of this is about looking at where the big corporate dollars are spent. And one of the things that I do, you know, in my newsletter, but I think it's also endemic of a lot of the coverage, is we're looking at this money that's spent directly with candidates, because that's what's up front. That's what we see.
Yeah.
But really, but those contributions are pretty limited, you know, 5,000, 10,000 a cycle. There are these 527 committees, the Republican Governors Association, the Republican State Leadership Committee. These are the groups that have been working systematically year after year after year to put Republicans in control of the state legislatures and governors. And there you see corporations spending millions of dollars. We just looked at 13 corporations only since 2016. And we found that those 13 corporations had spent $15 million just on these major committees that are principally responsible for installing anti-abortion politicians at the state level and the federal level. Because it obviously takes, there's been a lot of focus on the Supreme Court. That's obviously extremely important. And they're about to, it appears, overturn a constitutional right. But the impact of this is because you have Republican legislatures paired up with a Republican governor who are passing these very extreme abortion bans, and they have these trigger laws in place that will snap into effect when Roe's overturned. And that's the work of these committees that really right. made that possible. And that's where the corporations and that corporate money is so important.
So I have the list in front of me. And just to share with our listeners here on the Bill Press Pod, I think they may be surprised to hear some of the ones that you identified. Again, these are contributions to these three committees, the Republican Senate Committee, the Republican Governors Association, and the Republican State Leadership, which is state legislative races, right?
That's right.
So we're talking Amazon, $974,000 plus. CVS, $1.4 million. AT&T, $1.4 million. You know, you're not surprised at Walmart, but CVS and Amazon, General Motors, $2.4 million. I mean, these are very highly respected kind of mainstream American corporations. You don't think of them as having a right-wing agenda, but...
Yeah, that's right. And what I think we've seen is the Republican Party on a lot of these issues, abortion being one of them, has become radicalized. And corporations have not changed their giving habits.
Right, yeah.
And so they're continuing to do it. And one thing that's important about most of this money, not the money that's given to the National Republican Senatorial Committee, but the governors and the state legislative races, this isn't normally for federal spending. It mm-hmm. has to be voluntary contributions from employees. They go into a PAC, and then the company kind of doles them out. So you don't have to participate if you don't want to. This money that's going to the Republican Governors Association and the state legislative committee, these seven-figure donations, that's directly from corporate treasuries.
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's money that is coming directly from the corporation to these. So it's quite significant in that respect.
And don't some of these companies at the same time have a policy that says, oh, we respect our employees, we take care of our women employees especially, and we're concerned about their health care. And at the same time, you know, they're giving this money away to anti-abortion committees.
Yeah, you know, Amazon, I think, is a perfect example. Its CEO, Andy Jassy, you know, came out with a statement saying, you know, a while ago, saying the company's committed to gender equality and empowerment in the workplace and in communities. And even after, or I think it was announced the same day as the decision came out, so it may have kind of been anticipating this, Amazon is saying they will pay for their employees to travel to out of state to get an abortion if they need to, you know, which is fine. I don't think it's a systemic solution to the issue, but it's fine. But at the same time, they are funding the politicians that make these abortion bans possible. So I do think that there's a lot of hypocrisy around the rhetoric that these corporations use, because they're not matching that with their political donations. Their political donations are going the other way.
And it's also true, isn't it, that these are the same – well, the people that these committees are supporting, if they're responsible at the state level for laws that would ban abortion in their states, they're also responsible for the ones that would suppress voting rights, right? Which may attack the LGBT community, all kinds of repressive state laws.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if anything, the Republican State Legislative Committee, they support anti-abortion candidates. They don't, and they've been critical in putting them in office. They don't talk about that issue that much, but they're very vocal on, especially since 2020, on restricting voting. They've supported all sorts of voting restriction measures. They had a committee there. They actually were constructing a lot of the legislative language that got put in. So they're extremely active in voter suppression legislation and also anti-LGBTQ legislation as well.
All right. Now, well, we're talking about corporate money. I remember right after January 6th, there were dozens of corporations that said, oh, man, this is important. We are not going to give any more money to any of those Republicans who voted to overturn the election on the evening of January 6th, of whom there were 100, as we know, right, 147, 139 Republicans in the House and 8 Republican senators. How carefully are these corporations sticking to that promise, Judd?
Well, that's something we spend a lot of time with, Bill. So we've been tracking that really for the last year and a half, almost year and a half now.
And I'm glad you have been.
Yeah. So. And I'll say that it's a situation that's continuing to get less and less. I'm continuing to feel less and less optimism that these pledges will have any staying power.
Some of them have actually reversed, right?
Yes. There are a few dozen companies that have maintained their pledges, and so I don't think we should overlook that, because that is something that is significant. But do have a number of companies that were very vocal after January 6th about how the members of Congress who made this vote, that's not consistent with their values. They're cutting off donations to those folks. AT&T was one of those. Cigna was one of those. Comcast, Eli Lilly, General Electric, all of those fall into that category, and then have subsequently reversed and started donating both to individual members who voted to overturn the election on January 6th, and then also the committees like the NRCC, that the House, the Republican House Committee, that's supporting everyone who voted to overturn the election collectively. So there are a number of companies that have backslid on that. What's interesting is not really much has changed. It's not, you might be able to understand it more if the people who voted against the election results, certifying the election results, then subsequently said, you know what, now that it's been a year and Trump is still going around claiming the election was stolen, like that was really a mistake, that this was, I would never do that again. No one is saying that. Everyone is standing by their vote, but it's just the corporations that are changing their policies.
Yeah, right. Didn't last very long for sure. I'm going to take a quick break here on the Bill Press Pod, but you've recently got into a dust-up with the governor of Florida.
Correct.
over math books, among other things. Let's talk about that when we come back. Our guest, Judd Legum, who is the founder and, what shall we call you, the principal editor or of?
Yeah, of author. The,
author.
Good.
Author. Author. Yeah. I like that. Author of the newsletter Popular Information here on the Bill Press Pod. Hey, friends, for today's sponsor, I want to give a shout out and a plug to the newsletter we're talking about, Popular Information, founded by Judd Legum. I encourage you to do what I did. First of all, you can get it for free if you go to their link, popular.info. You can get it for free, but I encourage you to do what I did. Sign up for it. It costs you $50 a year. And that's worth it to support good accountability journalism, good independent journalism in this country. Popular Information, it's a great way to start your day. As Judd Legum says, it's news for people who give a damn. And you give a damn, so do the right thing and subscribe. And thank you.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. Our guest today, a good friend, a longtime friend, Judd Legum. He used to head up Think Progress at the Center for American Progress. Now he's got his own great newsletter out there, Popular Information. I encourage you to subscribe, as I have, and get the very good insights into the news of the day from Judd every morning. So, Judd, again, welcome back. And you and Ron DeSantis got into it a couple of days ago about math textbooks. He, of course, banned some 54 math textbooks in Florida because he said they were teaching things like critical race theory and other stuff. What's the truth behind this?
Yeah, I was fascinated by this because this was April 15th, and DeSantis and the Florida Department of Education come out and they say, we've reviewed these math textbooks and they're full of critical race theory, and we've rejected 54 of them. And then DeSantis himself said that these concepts, indoctrinating concepts like race essentialism, were especially bizarrely included for elementary school students. So I just couldn't believe, as the father of an elementary school student, I just couldn't believe where that could possibly come up in an elementary school textbook.
Particularly a math book, right?
A math book, yeah. Not history or something like that, social studies. So it's been a process. You know, a while ago, we obtained 8 or 9 of these books. We looked through them, couldn't find anything. But, you know, that wasn't all 54. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't say anything definitive, except that the ones we saw, we can't understand what they're talking about. But then, very quietly, just a few days ago, last week, the Florida Department of Education, and this was pursuant to a Freedom of Information Act request, released about 5,000 pages where you can see the review of every single textbook, both the ones that were accepted and rejected. So we looked at just the ones that were rejected for elementary school students.
Right.
And in each case, they ask the reviewer, is there any CRT in this textbook? And so we're going through each one, and every one, it's very clear. They all say, no CRT evident, no CRT concepts, no CRT present. Each one, there's actually were 16 separate reviews of these elementary school math textbooks, mm-hmm. and every one explicitly said that there was no CRT. So that's what, just pointing that out, that's what actually made the Florida Department of Education and Ron DeSantis's communications team upset.
So DeSantis was lying to the American people and to the people of Florida.
Absolutely. I don't see any justification for what he was saying. It was quite a dramatic and extreme claim. And really, now that we have the primary source material, the reviews, we see that actually the opposite was true. They did look for critical race theory. They found none.
They found none.
Yeah.
So 2 + 2 = 4 is somehow critical race theory? I mean, is that what?
Well, they're just
so
just
bizarre.
Just to humor them time, because I spent some time talking to them on the phone. Here is what their claim is, and we can let your listeners decide if this makes any sense. In addition to answering the question, is there any CRT mm-hmm. in the textbook? They also rated compliance or rated alignment from a scale of 1 to 5. 4 was good alignment. 5 was very good alignment. So a few of the people who answered the question, no CRT present, for instance, also rated it a 4 for good alignment instead of a 5 for very good alignment. So what the DeSantis folks say is that that, in fact, is evidence of CRT, which is absolutely crazy. And what I asked them and what I'm still waiting for is, if that's the case, that's fine, but just send me the portion of these textbooks that you are claiming is critical race theory. You know, that just said, just what have you found? You could say, okay, it's a 4. There's critical race theory there. Okay. Well, where is it? That's really the question that they haven't answered.
Right. Now, DeSantis is, of course, equally well known, liked or disliked, for his taking on Disney. Disney that dared criticize his so-called Don't Say Gay law, which he signed. Disney came out in opposition to it, say they were afraid it might spread to other states. And DeSantis retaliated by taking down a tax deal that Disney had originally been granted, rightfully or wrongly. They've had it since 1967, a pretty sweet deal when it comes to controlling their own property there. How do you rate this with DeSantis? What's behind him? And this is certainly unusual for a Republican politician to take on a big business, certainly one with a reputation of a Disney, right?
It is a new tactic. Uh-huh. But I think that DeSantis sees a lot of political advantage in this.
In taking on Disney,
because Disney, it's interesting because I think objectively, Disney did very little meaningful to oppose the Don't Say Gay.
Oh, right.
They didn't put out a statement until after it had passed the House and the Senate. It only cleared the Senate by 3 votes. Mm-hmm. So it was a close vote in the Senate. A strong statement by Disney prior to that vote might have made a difference. But once it was headed to DeSantis's desk, that was that. This was DeSantis's bill. There was no chance. But after that, then it came out with the statement. But I think DeSantis sees an opportunity to make an example of them, to say that they're going to stand up to woke corporations and, he's the guy who can take on, this contagion. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's doing. And I think that you're going to see a lot more of it. Now, the same folks also continue to accept money from the corporations that they attack, including DeSantis. Mm-hmm. But I think publicly it resonates. It's part of sort of the Trump style populism. And by that, I mean the phony style of populism.
Right. But we remember that Pat Robertson also took on Disney, right? Because they allowed the gay pride parade. And
that's right.
that seems to, be like the underbelly of DeSantis' attack. And Ted Cruz has said things like that too. Is there kind of a campaign to accuse Disney of being basically pro-homosexuality or promoting the gay lifestyle?
Yeah, I think it's more than that. I mean, you have folks in DeSantis's, his communications director saying that this is about grooming children, which is, of course, one of the classic, smears against the LGBTQ community is the claim that's what they're predators. I think it is. It's just a reinvention. It's a rebranding of these cultural grievances that maybe some folks and sometimes I think I found myself falling in this trap. Thought that as a society, perhaps we had moved on from some of this, but it's back in a pretty big way. Just a few years ago, I don't think you saw these kind of sustained direct attacks on gender and sexuality issues.
No, and as you point out too, it is a new tack for Republicans certainly to come out, anti-corporation, anti-business at AW. Do you think, last I saw, Disney has about 77,000 employees. Do you think there could be a backlash with all the revenue and revenue that they provide to Florida and tourists that they bring to Florida?
Well, I think that's another reason why DeSantis probably picked Disney as the company to attack in this way, is that unlike some companies that maybe just have a headquarter building or something else that's a little more fungible, you know, they've got that huge Disney World campus. So there's very little they can do. They're there. You know, they can't move Disney World. They can't move Epcot Center and everything else. So there's very little risk of Florida losing those jobs. Is it, you know, it could end up being politically unpopular. I'm not sure. I think certainly some of these more extreme measures, you know, whether it's the LGBTQ stuff, whether it's the abortion stuff, I don't think poll very well. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more about, you know, I think for DeSantis, it seems like he may not be as concerned about what does it say about his next run for governor in Florida as how are you going to attract the GOP base for a run for president. And so for that, it may be pretty helpful for him.
So do you agree with Rich Lowry's recent piece in the New York Times that Ron DeSantis is the, quote, new Republican Party?
Well, I think Lowry was attempting to make a real distinction between DeSantis and Trump. You know, in right. some ways, DeSantis is more savvy, but I don't think he's any more honest. So I'm not sure how new this is. It's a little different.
Right. But after Trump, he seems to be the most popular Republican politician in the country today.
I think that's absolutely. I think what he does is professionalizes to some degree a lot of the tactics that Trump showed can be effective in Republican politics and in certain circumstances, moving to a general election.
Well, yeah. Now, just a sign of how many different topics you cover and how widespread is your reach with the newsletter, John, I want to ask you about the richest man on the planet, Elon Musk, because you've also been writing about him. Here's a man who, well, depending on the time of day, he wants to buy Twitter and has made an offer, and then he backs down, and then he comes back again. But he says he's doing so to champion free speech. He's painting himself as a champion of free speech on the planet. How real is that claim?
Yeah, this has been really interesting because he's very insistent on that. One thing that kind of struck my interest is what he says is that he only wants to restrict speech to the extent that there are laws restricting speech, which of course is not really what the First Amendment is about. You know, the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law. So if you're for free speech, it shouldn't matter what the law is, right? You have that right to speak regardless.
Good point, right.
But it's particularly interesting when you look at his relationship with China, which is a huge market for Tesla. Most of the Teslas are made there overall, and it's also he's allowed to sell cars in China. Mm-hmm. But the reason is that he has essentially acceded to their demands about what he should say and how he should act in the country.
Right. So he's not for free speech necessarily in China, if China doesn't, right? Doesn't
I
like
think
it.
He's been pretty clear about that he doesn't see anything wrong with just going by whatever the rules of that country are. And, you know, that's how he's operated in China all the way up to, there was a report in Bloomberg, I believe, that he actually, there's been in a number of occasions, so a lot of hubbub among Chinese consumers of Tesla that there were some issues with the car, the safety of the car. I have no idea if there really were issues or not. I've never driven a Chinese Tesla or any Tesla. But he went so far as to, or the company did, to ask Chinese censors to shut down some of this criticism on Chinese social media companies and Chinese social media networks. So his commitment to making money is certainly very strong. I think his commitment to free speech is at best TBD.
Yeah. So let's wrap here. Tell us about the newsletter. When did you start it? How'd you start it? Why'd you start it?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, I was at Think Progress. It had grown to a staff of about 40 people. I found I was spending a lot of time managing people, doing paperwork, doing administrative stuff. And I really missed just doing the research, doing the writing, doing the work that I enjoyed. So I wanted to transition to something where I could do more of that. So I started in July of 2018. And since then, with a couple of weeks a year, I take off. But other than that, it comes out four times a week. And we try to dig into documents, get a hold of whatever we can, whatever information we can, and give some new perspective on some of these issues. We focus a lot on accountability journalism. Corporation is saying this. Yeah. Okay, what are they doing? Elon Musk is saying this. Okay, what's he doing? Because I think that's something that often is missing. We hear a lot about what powerful people are saying they're doing, but we're not always checking and looking at what the reality is.
Yeah, I love your slogan, news for people who give a damn. So how can people find you and sign up?
They can go to popular.info.
Popular.info.
Yep.
There you go. Well, we thank you so much, Judd, for what you're doing. And thank you for taking time to join us today on the Bill Press Pod. Keep up the great work. We'll be following you, and we'll talk again soon.
Yep. Hope to do so. Nice talking to you.
And that's it for today's podcast with Judd Legum. A big thanks to Judd for taking time to join us. Thanks to all of you for listening. There will be a link, of course, to sign up for the newsletter, Popular Information, in the episode notes to today's podcast, Popular Information. And we'll be back on Friday with our Reporters Roundtable. I know you all look forward to that. Lots to talk about this week. We already know we'll be talking more about the aftermath of the Buffalo massacre, including the president and the first lady's visit to Buffalo, also the president's trip to Southeast Asia. And of course, we'll be looking at the results of the Republican primary elections this week in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Oregon, and Idaho. Wow. Big Reporters Roundtable on Friday. Meanwhile, take care of yourselves. Be strong, be safe, and come back and see us Friday for the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.